Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journeys.
The consultants that we work with are, I think, you know, maybe the strongest part of our whole program. These are tremendous professionals who are really eager to work with entrepreneurs, and each consultant will work with about four entrepreneurs over the course of 4 months. So it's quite personalized. They'll put in more than 100 hours of work on every company.
Right.
So that is also creating a real relationship between the entrepreneur and the consultant. And typically the consultant will become, you know, really one of the main strategic advisors to the company. Our number one priority right now is to make sure that we do the best possible job scaling our accelerator program in Latin America in partnership with the Inter-American Development Bank. And so we're very focused on execution right now. But as part of that, we are also designing a new fund, which we're going to roll out this year. And this is a fund that will be focused on basically catalyzing investment into companies that are solving the sustainable development goals.
I'm very pleased today to introduce Ben Powell. Ben is founder of Agora Partnerships, an organization that provides early stage social entrepreneurs in Latin America with the resources they need to grow, primarily through the Agora Accelerator, a 4-month program designed to provide entrepreneurs access to the knowledge, networks, and capital they need to succeed. Since 2011, Agora has supported some 125 companies that have raised $52 million and created 5,000 jobs. 90% of these companies are still operating. Thank you very much, Ben, for taking the time today to speak to Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs. It's a great honor to speak to you about the work that you're doing, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about Agora and your vision and what you've done and plan to do in the future.
Thanks, Virgo. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Great. So can you tell me the background to this, to Agora, how you came to see this as something that you wanted to do?
Sure. It actually started back when maybe about 15, no, maybe 20 years ago when I was trying to figure out what to do with my life and decided to team up with a Mexican friend of mine to build a miniature golf course and a bar in Puebla, Mexico. And that was a real adventure for me. And that was my first foray into the world of small business, and in particular, in Mexico. And so that was an incredible challenge for me, but it was also an exhilarating ride. And we built this miniature golf course. It was successful. And I saw through that experience just the sheer power of what entrepreneurship and a good job can do for development. And I remember, you know, the story that I like to tell about that experience is I remember one day coming into the office in Puebla, Mexico, and feeling this energy in the room. And our manager ran up to us and said, "Ben, have you heard the news? Have you heard the news?" And I was like, what's going on? And he said, "Well, Maribel, who was our cashier, she just got a mortgage and she now has just got an apartment." And everyone was high-fiving and hugging, and Maribel was just beaming. And this was a woman who had worked as a cashier at a discotheque, you know, in the night shift, informal economy, never had a bank account, never had a steady formal job. And she was a wonderful, hardworking woman, is. And she was able, by virtue of the job that, you know, we had created, to open up a bank account, to establish credit history, to get a government subsidized loan, to own her own apartment. And she was a single mom. And this for her was an incredibly important moment. And I felt in a small way that that, you know, I had contributed to this, you know, wonderful moment in this woman's life. And I felt like I was having more of an impact in the world with this little miniature golf course in Mexico than at my day job at the time, which was working for the White House Office of Management and Budget. And it just really brought home to me the importance of innovation and entrepreneurship to economic development and to creating opportunities where people can thrive and have good, dignified jobs and improve their lives. And so I eventually quit my job at the OMB and went to Columbia Business School. And I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. What was it going to be, a for-profit company? Would it be a fund? Would it be a nonprofit? But I knew that I was very interested in supporting entrepreneurship in Latin America. And I spent pretty much my whole time in business school trying to figure out, you know, what was the best way to go about that, and was very fortunate to have just a lot of really smart people around me to help me think through that issue, to do research. Had some fantastic professors. Paul Tierney was one of them, who's the chairman of TechnoServe, who really helped me think about how we might be able to use capital to support small businesses. And that's really where the idea was crystallized, you know, in that business school environment, really trying to figure out how do we blend the discipline of investment and business with the, you know, imperative to create sustainable economic development in, you know, very poor communities.
Right. Right. So what is Agora Partners? What do you do?
So we think of ourselves as a system building organization that is focused on driving capital and support to entrepreneurs who are solving social problems all throughout Latin America. And we do that in a variety of ways. We have a number of programs. Our signature program is our accelerator program. And what we do there is identify high potential entrepreneurs, basically get them investment ready, connect them with investors and supporters, and help them to grow their businesses.
Right. And how many people do you take in this accelerator? What's the process? How do they hear of you? How do you find them? And can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So maybe I'll just say before getting into that, we didn't just create the accelerator out of a vacuum. We when we started, we launched a venture fund. We call it a fund. It was $500,000 pool of capital that we raised from individual investors and a Dutch foundation to invest in early stage, seed stage companies in Nicaragua. And we learned a lot from that experience. And based on that experience, we figured out there was a couple of real challenges that that we couldn't overcome on our own. And primarily, the challenges were, from a fund perspective, there just was not enough investment-ready deals. It was very difficult for us to find deals. And then you could find potential entrepreneurs who were solving social problems, but they needed tremendous amounts of help and support. And so it was very difficult just to find and source deals. Huge, huge challenge. We could find and source talent, but deals that were ready to go to invest in was much harder.
Why is that?
I think it was because you know, we were dealing just in Nicaragua. So my co-founder, Ricardo Terán, is Nicaraguan, and we really started Agora as a bicultural organization with headquarters, you know, with kind of headquarters in D.C., the capital of the world's most powerful country, and and in Managua, Nicaragua, which is the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And so we grew up with this kind of dual identity, part of which is thinking big picture, macro system change, and the other is thinking, how do we really help entrepreneurs on the ground in the context that they're living in? And so I think in Nicaragua, there just were not that many companies, and we were new. And so we hadn't quite built all of the partnerships and relationships to really begin to source the best companies. And then we had some pressure once we had created the fund to start investing. Even though it took us a while, because we were trying to be as cautious as we could, it took us a while to make those first investments. And then the second, so that was like the real problem of pipeline, just a small market. And then the challenge was some of the companies that were doing really well, they needed additional investment. And we didn't have, at that point, any other co-investors. Like, this was very early days in the impact investing scene. We launched the fund in 2006. And so we found that also very problematic. And so we decided, we had a big decision, really, which was, and we made this decision in 2010, you know, do we try to create a real fund, like $20 million fund that had dedicated management team that was really focused on making returns for investors and basically say, hey, we're investors. That's what we are. Or do we say, well, you know, ultimately we're a social enterprise nonprofit focused on how do you create strong ecosystems to support entrepreneurship. So maybe we instead focus on developing that pipeline of entrepreneurs that are ready to scale, that are ready for investment, and we leave the actual investing to others. Because, you know, like many entrepreneurs, we had huge dreams, and we still do, but we try to take a huge bite out of the apple. You know, let's build an ecosystem, let's build an organization, let's create a fund, and let's do it all with no money, and just by dint of hard work and sheer determination, we're going to somehow make it all work. And I'm very proud of what we accomplished in those days, and I really think that we have you know, we have punched above our weight. But at the end of the day, we had just taken on way more than we could handle. And we weren't able to focus on just one or two things to do it really well. And so we decided, okay, let's actually try to fix this problem of lack of pipeline. And you know, on the theory that the impact investing industry was quickly coalescing, and it was very clear that there was a huge appetite among investors to allocate capital differently, that there was a hunger for that, and that there wasn't going to be a problem of capital. The bigger problem was to actually find those deals that were capable of absorbing capital.
Right.
And
right.
So that is what that's what the accelerator is basically about.
Yeah.
Although I would say it's bigger than that, because, you know, entrepreneurs, they need capital, but they need a lot more than capital, right?
Yes.
So capital is not, it's not the panacea. It's just the first step.
Yeah.
And so we've put a lot of time into trying to figure out how do you build a strong entrepreneur community that facilitates success.
Yes.
That makes it easier for entrepreneurs to make better decisions, to connect with the right people, to develop, you know, self-mastery and manage stress, but also to be able to take a step back, slow down, and look at their business with fresh eyes. And,
right.
I think that is actually what the accelerator does probably the best. That's probably the best thing it does.
Yes, yes. Well, we can talk about the accelerator maybe in more detail in a moment. But can you talk about ecosystem and what is it and what does a good one look like? And this is an area I know of growing interest. I think there's a lot happening in this world at the moment. And clearly, you know, you've been at the forefront in a sense because it's been unfolding in time and you've been at it for a little bit as well. So can we maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly something that I've grown to appreciate more as I've been in this business. And you can use the metaphor of the garden, right? You know, we're trying to figure out how we as a society can more effectively allocate resources to people and teams that can turn resources, whether it's money or social capital or human capital, but that can take those resources and turn it into a scalable solution that is creating social change for that community or
right,
the world.
Right.
That is a huge and sort of abstract challenge.
Yes.
But you can concretize it, you know. So in our particular industry, you have some key actors. I actually, you know, at Agora, we think of having four really key actors that we have to create value for all of them or our model collapses. And that is number one, the entrepreneur, number two, investors, number three, funders and partners who contribute resources and strategic support to our organization. And lastly, our own team, which it's very easy to kind of forget that you have to take care of your team because you want to be able to build the best possible team you can and attract the best talent. So those are the four actors that we look at. There are obviously other actors, you know, in the ecosystem. There's obviously government, there's corporations, there's universities, and there's a whole, in, you know, policy environment to deal with as well. But I think that the central challenge is in our very specific industry, which is basically which is early stage companies solving social problems. And the challenge there is that there is very high friction costs between investors and entrepreneurs. So it is very difficult if you're an investor to invest because the transaction costs are high, the search costs are high, the risks are high, exits are very unclear, and there's frankly just not enough information flowing through the system to make investors feel that they can make good decisions with enough information. And so when I talk about, you know, how to build the ecosystem, you know, I'm really talking about how do we surface information and get it to the right people, number one. And number two, how do we actually build trust among these different actors? Because it's very difficult to have a functioning marketplace if there's no trust. And we are building a market. Everything is new. And so that requires, you know, I think a different way of interacting with the different players. And it requires getting to know people and doing retreats and opening up a little bit so that people really understand what their partner's true motivations are so that we can align incentives in a more optimal way that ultimately will drive more capital, more resources to entrepreneurs and ultimately make the whole ecosystem stronger and as a result make ourselves as a planet more resilient and more effective and efficient, you know, in organizing ourselves to address these huge challenges that you know we're already facing.
Right. When you say align incentives, what do you mean there?
Well, for example, you know, if you're an investor, you know, you want to really understand well, let me put it this way. There are lots of different investors out there, and they have different incentives. Some are purely profit maximizing. Some are looking for some kind of blended return. And so you want to make sure that you're connecting the right kind of capital with the entrepreneur's needs. And, you know, one of the challenges in the early stage space with smaller companies is that most companies don't actually need a lot of money. You know, maybe they need 50,000, 100,000, you know, maybe half a million. The problem is many investors really don't want to invest such small amounts for some of the reasons I mentioned before. You know, the transaction costs relative to deal size are very high. And so it's really hard to make money as an investor if you're making lots and lots of $50,000 bets, certainly given the current structure of how deals are done. And so so as a result, often entrepreneurs will get more money than they actually need. And we made this mistake ourselves with the Agora Venture Fund with a couple of our deals. And basically, the entrepreneur needed really $20,000, and we invested $100,000. And that was in part because of fund economics and just wanting to make a bigger bet and have a bigger stake. But in retrospect, that was the wrong decision. So, you know, aligning incentives is just really about making sure everybody knows what the ultimate objective is, what that looks like, and that that fits everybody's needs. And in particular with funders, this is where it gets tricky, because funders rightly are looking at you know, quantifiable results and very focused on that, you know, as they should be. But a lot of the connective tissue and the social capital that you need to build in order to build a functioning market or a vibrant ecosystem, all of that is in effect off the balance sheet of social enterprises, and is not something that many funders appreciate or understand, in part because it is difficult to quantify. And that is, you know, to some degree on us as kind of entrepreneurs trying to build these systems to do a better job of communicating the tangible impact of building trust and building social capital within an ecosystem. But if you as a funder don't care about that, you are going to be very focused. You're going to kind of force the organization to just focus on the numbers. And my experience has been that, you know, it's very easy to, you know, pump up your numbers if that's what the funder really wants. But pumping up your numbers, you know, touching more people, all that kind of stuff doesn't necessarily lead to any lasting change. And so that you can have a misalignment of incentives if you are focused on system change and actually changing mindsets and changing behavior and changing the way actors interact in a system so that they can do business together and create change together. If that's your focus, but the focus of the funder is how many seminars were delivered, how many entrepreneurs received your training. If it's a numbers game for the funder, then you know, you're going to be taken away. Your mission's going to drift to what the funder wants. So all of that is to say that, you know, in the ideal situation, incentives, everyone is working towards the same goal, but different actors, you know, care about different pieces of it. But but altogether, it's the same vision.
Right. So you talk about mission drift. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, mission drift is a challenge that every you know, nonprofit, you know, founder or CEO, you know, has to tackle at some point. And sometimes it's good to drift your mission a little bit if you want to expand your mission, or if you see your mission as bigger than what it was initially. But I think that you know, there are so many challenges that you have to develop expertise in a couple of areas. And if you try to be too expansive and solve too many problems, then you're going to confuse people, and you're never going to create that real expertise that will give you the credibility to create more partnerships, and that really drives value for you.
Very interesting. So what's the scale of your activity at the moment then?
Well, I'm really happy to say that we have created this great partnership with the Inter-American Development Bank, and they are partnering with us to scale our accelerator program throughout Latin America over the next 3 years. So over the last 5 years, we've worked with about 25 to 30 companies a year through our accelerator program. And this year, we're going to double that to 50 to 60. We're going to have two cycles. And then, you know, next year, we may even increase that. So our scale is we have 125 companies that have gone through the program. We have offices, just to give you a sense of kind of where we are. Our headquarters are in D.C. And then we have a big office in Managua, and then an office in Mexico City. And then every year we have fellows who come. So we'll have seven fellows who are arriving in just a couple weeks for training in Mexico City. And then they will be placed in Bogota and I think Buenos Aires and Managua and Mexico City. And they will perform a lot of the consulting from those bases. A lot of the consulting is done virtually after entrepreneurs come to our retreat.
Okay. Interesting. And can you tell me a little bit about the accelerator, how it's structured?
Sure. So we are looking to find basically the best companies we can in Latin America that are solving a social and environmental problem. Typically, they come into the program with about $100,000 in revenue. Some are bigger, some are smaller, but these are viable companies that have sales, have employees, but need support to get to the next level. And we have a pretty rigorous application process, and we winnow it down, and then we invite the successful candidates to join the program. The program has a cost. It's not that much. It's around $1,000. And that cost is heavily subsidized by our funders. And our funders are people who believe that an intermediary organization like ours can be extremely helpful in helping these companies to grow. And of course, the argument is that a little bit of philanthropic support to our organization enables the companies to access all kinds of resources and investment to grow their business and create social impact.
Right.
So once the companies get to the retreat, it's a week retreat. We focus on individual leadership. We talk about the impact investing industry, and we talk about, you know, your intention and purpose as an entrepreneur and a leader. And we go through the business model canvas. We use that methodology as kind of the spine or backbone of our consulting approach. And after that week, which is usually very transformative and impactful, we certainly hope so on the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur will go back and to their business, and they'll spend about 4 months working with the consultant, going through 12 different modules that we have in our program. And the consultant will tailor the modules based on the needs of the business. So we recognize that, you know, no two businesses are the same. So we have what I would call a flexible methodology that really tries to force the entrepreneur to engage in conversations about strategic issues that they might otherwise, you know, not have time to do, or not have the right people, you know, to talk to about. And so after that period is done, we have a diagnostic phase, and then we have a phase where we're really working through the issues, coming up with what are the needs of the business? How much capital, what kinds of capital, for what, why, what is that case? And then the third part of the program is, once we figure out that piece, how do we communicate that to potential investors and supporters? And so we will help the entrepreneur with pitch decks and investment memos. We will help them with financial modeling. The consultants that we work with are, I think, you know, maybe the strongest part of our whole program. These are tremendous professionals who are really eager to work with entrepreneurs. And each consultant will work with about four entrepreneurs over the course of 4 months. So it's quite personalized. They'll put in more than 100 hours of work on every company.
Right.
So that is also creating a real relationship between the entrepreneur and the consultant. And typically the consultant will become, you know, really one of the main strategic advisors to the company. And sometimes they've even become board members afterwards of the company. So, and then at the end of the program, we will work to make actual connections with investors. And we will also put on investment roundtables and demo days and these kinds of events where, you know, you're pitching and then you're having a conversation and we're there to follow up and to, you know, act as a liaison, you know, and an advisor between the entrepreneur and the investor.
Right.
It's all about greasing the wheel so that we can make it easier and eliminate some of the friction in this very difficult job. I mean, early stage impact investors have an extremely difficult job. And so we are trying to also make it easier for them and to understand what their needs are so that we can create, you know, a better product and service that helps these two groups to come to terms, you know, faster and more effectively.
Right. That's very interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that the entrepreneur faces in terms of trying to understand what kind of capital they need, what kind of funding, not just the sums of money involved, but how that could or should be structured? It's obviously a very big question and depends on various different factors. But are there a couple of things you observe about how entrepreneurs find this a challenge?
I think the biggest challenge is figuring out how much money do they actually need and who do they want to partner with. So do you want equity? If you want equity, what kind of investor are you looking for? And do you really need equity and why do you need equity? Those kinds of questions are the ones that you can't just come up with, you know, overnight. You need to really think about it and think about your long-term intention, your long-term plan. Is this smart capital? Is it strategic capital? There's all kinds of trade-offs around the type of money and then the cost of that capital. So some capital is much more expensive than others, but may also provide more benefit. So, you know, many entrepreneurs, they're not investment bankers, right? In fact, it's a very different mentality. So they need help in navigating this. And I hope that they see our consultants as trusted advisors to help them do that.
Right. It, when you mention smart capital and strategic capital, what do you mean there?
Well, I mean, smart capital, strategic capital is, you know, capital where the investor is adding more than just their check. They're adding strategic advice, relationships, connections with potential customers, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, right. And you also help them raise grant funding.
We do. We do. We actually work as a pass-through entity. So some companies will find investors who would prefer to give them a grant, maybe to get to the next level, and so we offer our services as a pass-through entity, so that the funder can can fund us, and then we pass the money back to the entrepreneur. So right. Yes.
Yeah. Can you talk about investment readiness and what that means, and a little bit about the journey that you see your entrepreneurs go through to become investment ready, that you help them?
Yeah. And I think investment readiness, it has two sides. One is the entrepreneur ready, and then is the investor ready? And so for the entrepreneur to be ready, they really have to understand the vision of the company, where it's going, and how the money that they're asking for will add value and create value in the company. And so that process just takes a very long time. And that's pretty much it from an entrepreneur's perspective. Now, from an investor's perspective, they don't intuit, or it's harder for them to intuit exactly how this money is going to create value. Maybe they get it, but they also want lots and lots of information about the actual company, because they don't want to get ripped off. And so there is a whole diligence process that investors go through. And that diligence process is typically quite onerous. And for many entrepreneurs, it's just paperwork and it's exhausting. And most entrepreneurs have no idea how much information investors are going to ask. And it's not like impact investors ask less information than, more traditional investors. So in fact, they often, ask for more information because they also want to understand quantitatively how impact is created and measured. And so creating, diligence folders for investors, which is one of the services that we offer, that dramatically lowers the time and cost for investors to go down the rabbit's hole of maybe, negotiating a deal with the entrepreneur. Because what impact investors, especially early stage impact investors, do not have is time. They just don't have time to go down, different paths that then end up leading nowhere because the entrepreneur just doesn't have the information that the investor needs. And so we've seen a lot of deals, especially in the early days, fall apart because of that. And so one of the things that we try to do is help facilitate just that transfer of information. And part of that is what investment readiness is all about. It means you as an entrepreneur, you know what the money is for, and you are capable of absorbing the money, and your organization is capable of absorbing the money and putting it to good use. And then on the investor side, you have the information that you need in order to make a decision.
Right. What advice then would you give entrepreneurs that don't manage to make it onto your accelerator program that are looking for money?
Well, I think that the first advice would be to, if it's really hard for you to raise money because you have if you don't have connections or you're just feeling like, I don't know how I'm going to raise money, my advice would be to continue to focus on the million things in the business that you can change and can affect, because you can certainly grow a successful business without, a lot of outside capital. So you need to strengthen your muscles around, how do you be super efficient? How do you create really motivated workforce? How do you create just a really incredible environment where, people, can express their creativity, can thrive, and can be more productive? So there's a lot of ways of increasing productivity on labor as opposed to just using capital to increase productivity. So that would be my main advice. But if you really need money and you're not in an accelerator program, what I would probably do is, start networking like crazy, talk to banks, try to explain to them your vision and where you're going, and get them excited and get them to believe in you. And then you begin to build that network, you begin to build that trust, and you begin to demonstrate a track record. And that is going to open up opportunities. You know, most companies don't go through accelerators. So it's not like you need an accelerator to be successful. But I do think that if you don't have a lot of access to the right networks, what a good program can do is accelerate, you know, the time it takes you to get to those doors. That if you can go through that door, you know, you will be able to really grow your business. And so, you know, I think that accelerators actually are going to increasingly play a very important role in making this whole market much more efficient. And it's probably a very, very good investment for entrepreneurs.
And how would you characterize the lay of the land with respect to funders in Latin America? Big question, but you've probably seen more capital come into the market. A few noticeable trends.
Well, I think Latin America in particular, there is a lot of interest in impact investing and in entrepreneurship. It's a pretty entrepreneurial region to begin with, and it's kind of had to be. Unlike some other areas in the world, it's fertile ground in Latin America. You know, one of the challenges in Latin America is that it's a very divided society, a very unequal society. And so, you know, you're seeing tremendous social innovation and entrepreneurship at the, upper level. The highly educated Latins are doing all kinds of amazing stuff. At the lower level, you know, it's partly cultural, but it's also just a lack of networks and a lack of, to some degree, a lack of a vision of what's possible. And so I think there is funding coming in, but, you know, funding has been very difficult. There isn't a lot of funding. There's a lot of bootstrapping. I think that's actually made the sort of social entrepreneurship movement pretty resilient in Latin America, because it hasn't been inundated with lots of money. But it's also very different in different countries. Mexico, Chile, these are countries with pretty vibrant social enterprise ecosystems. Still a very long way to go, but at least there is a community there. Colombia, again, growing very quickly. And I'm extremely bullish on Colombia as a country where you're going to see a tremendous amount of social entrepreneurship activity in the future. And you'll see, a lot of investment. And they've actually, in a very short period of time, been able to generate a lot of local resources to support the industry. And the same in Mexico. Compartamos, the microfinance bank, IPO'd, and a number of the leading investors from Compartamos created something called Promotora Social Mexico, which is a great organization focused on building the social enterprise ecosystem in Mexico. It's no longer, kind of outside investors coming in to, impose our ideas on Latin America. It's, a increasingly globalized market. There's tremendous connection and relationships between, North America and South America. And I see that trend accelerating. I hope it will accelerate. I think it will.
Right. And what about, Ben, for you, what have been some of the biggest challenges, or one or two challenges maybe? I know we're coming to the end of the podcast now. Just wondering what have been, particular challenges that you've had to face on your journey?
Sure.
Many.
Yeah.
Where to begin?
I think the biggest challenge that we've had from a business perspective is figuring out our business model. It's difficult because we're trying to build a market. We're trying to deliver service and, you know, a sense of community and a sense of belonging that will help entrepreneurs to really shift their mindset. And we're trying to build a brand because if you have a brand, then everything becomes easier and your friction costs get lower and you can scale. And so we're trying to do many things that I think are really needed in the ecosystem. But you have to get each of those things paid for. And so you got to figure out, you know, how can I create a product that I can take to a funder that's compelling to them? And we're getting closer to that, you know, but that has been kind of a constant struggle, is really what is that value proposition to a big funder that will allow them to come in and say, wow, this is really exciting. I want to support you. And I would say that we're getting closer to that. And I think this year we're going to come out with some really exciting new ideas and campaigns. But that business model is always a challenge when you basically have, you know, a different one group that you're providing value to and then another group that's actually paying you. And so figuring out how to create more earned income, diversify our revenue streams so that we can continue to grow. And why do we need to do that? Because we're in a really fortunate place. There's so many incredibly talented people out there who want to help entrepreneurs and have a systems, you know, approach, and they're looking for opportunities to take their talent to make a difference. And I think that, and I hope that we can really be one of those organizations that attracts those kind of folks. And I think we do. I'm really proud of our team. But you know, in order to do that really well, you know, you need to convince people that this is an organization that is growing and growing and growing, and that there's real career opportunities. And I think you have many, many social enterprises and accelerators that are very early stage, or they're pretty precarious. And so you have just a couple founders and, you know, one or two other folks. But to build an organization that doesn't need the founder, that is very strong, that has really, you know, smart people with the right skill sets, that just takes a tremendous amount of energy and resources. And it's always difficult to, you know, find that unrestricted funding of people who would treat us in the way that they would treat a for-profit company. And I think that, you know, I've been very fortunate to participate in a number of wonderful, you know, programs like Ashoka and Draper Richards Kaplan that have, you know, provided resources and a community. But I have to say that there is not a lot of real venture philanthropy going into building system building institutions. And there's more of that. And I think funders are really beginning to appreciate how important system building organizations are, but it's still a pretty small pool. And so, you know, we're thinking about how we can, you know, expand and to some degree break out of the kind of social entrepreneurship world, because I see ourselves as being about economic development, and economic development is not just something that I worry about in Latin America. It's, you know, in the United States, we have a huge, huge challenge. And we have many entrepreneurs, you know, who are underserved and not getting the resources that they need. And so this is like a global issue, global problem. And, you know, the business model for an impact accelerator is totally different than for, let's say, a Y Combinator or traditional accelerator program that is looking really to bet on a couple of unicorns that will IPO, and that's where most of the returns will be. You know, we're not looking necessarily to invest in the next Google, although I would love to. We're looking to invest in companies that can create 50, 100, 200 jobs and return profit to investors. And that's where we see there being a real opportunity to create change if you can activate those entrepreneurs. But traditional business models for for-profit accelerators don't quite match with the needs that these entrepreneurs have.
Right. So at the one time you're helping the entrepreneurs, but you're dealing with a pretty similar type of problem yourself, challenges.
Exactly.
Building business models, working out, communicating to different kinds of investors and making sure that, you know, you can build relationships with people who will be able to, you know, support you as you grow.
Exactly. No, exactly.
So finally then, Ben, what's your vision then for the next 5 years for Agora?
Well, our number one priority right now is to make sure that we do the best possible job scaling our accelerator program in Latin America in partnership with the Inter-American Development Bank. And so we're very focused on execution right now. But as part of that, we are also designing a new fund, which we're going to roll out this year. And this is a fund that will be focused on basically catalyzing investment into companies that are solving the sustainable development goals. Every company we work with is working on one or more of the sustainable development goals. And all of them will have metrics that they will be reporting on in terms of how they're solving the goal. And so we're going to create a fund that is designed to invest in the companies that we know, because we've gotten to know them, that where we feel like we have conviction that they are good investments and will create impact. And then the hope is that with our investor network, which we have created and which we're growing, that we will be able to bring in co-investment. And, you know, many of the challenges that we had identified with our very first fund in 2006, we think this new fund, coupled with a robust accelerator program, will be able to solve those problems. And then, you know, we're also interested in potentially expanding into other regions of the world. So, you know, my real vision is, I mean, when you think about like inspiration, I think to me, the patron saint of social entrepreneurship is Benjamin Franklin. And I think he exemplifies the spirit of innovation for the common good. And it's an attitude, it's a mindset. And so when I think of our vision, I don't exactly know where we're going. You know, I want to build a strong, robust ecosystem that supports entrepreneurship, that makes it easier as a society for us to invest in people who are making the world better. And so that is also what Franklin, you know, that was his mindset. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take that and take that vision and run with it and build partnerships, create coalitions, you know, bring in as many groups as possible, be as inclusive as we can be. And our community of entrepreneurs is very representative of Latin America. We're 50-50 men, women. We have about 8% entrepreneurs from indigenous backgrounds. We have entrepreneurs who went to Stanford Business School. We have some entrepreneurs who didn't, you know, go to college. And we're trying to create a community that can help each other and support each other, even if it doesn't all have the same background. Because if you are an entrepreneur, that's a brotherhood, that's a sisterhood. And so to the extent that we can support that ethos of inclusive entrepreneurship focused on solving social problems, partner with all these great organizations that are out there, you know, B Corps, all these groups that are also focused on this, and help coordinate that movement, drive that movement forward, co-create, and ultimately make it as easy, you know, as easy as going on Kiva and investing in an entrepreneur, you know, making a no interest loan. Well, I would love to be able to do that with Agora. So, you know, whether it's our website or another website, you know, anyone, anywhere should be able to invest in entrepreneurs who are making the world better. And to do that, you need more than just the technology and the platform. You need to actually have that ecosystem that is, in fact, surfacing and nurturing, cultivating supporting those entrepreneurs. And when you're in our program, you are always in our program. So you don't just graduate and you're gone. You can continue to get services that you pay for at a very low rate that can help you to grow your business. And so I guess, yeah, my vision is just kind of continue doing what we're doing, building this fund, building partnerships, and contributing along with many, many others to a more robust ecosystem that supports entrepreneurs.
A very exciting vision, Ben, and I wish you the very best of success with Agora in the future. And thank you so much for sharing the great work that you've done and your vision and insights with Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs today.
Well, thank you so much, Virgil. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.